Live from Petonia, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you may be. You are listening to the Cinematica Podcast. This is a weekly roundup of all the reviews, news and opinion about the world of cinema, helping guide you through the dense jungle of the latest cinema releases and get the best value out of your cinema dollar and your cinema time. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio is
Simon Waring
and Kaylee Carruthers.
G'day Simon, g'day Kaylee.
G'day.
Lovely to see you.
Yes, lovely to see you as well.
Every week we are here to review all of the latest releases, talk to interesting people about what they've been watching, and keep a close eye on what's happening around the world of film, stories that we're looking forward to. In today's program, Kaylee.
Yes, in true holiday style, I act like an absolute Muppet. Dan accepts his impossible mission to watch every film out this week and feels a bit melancholic about the whole experience after being trapped on an island full of singing chipmunks.
You punster.
And we look forward to the Boxing Day Blitz with the Iron Lady and Adventures of Tintin.
It's all just too exciting for words in this week's edition of the Cinematica Podcast. This is, in fact, our Christmas special.
And episode number 10.
We're in double figures, ladies and gentlemen. What a magnificent, astounding achievement. You know, New Zealand podcasts do have a reputation. I've been talking to a few people. They have a reputation for fizzling out after a handful of episodes, but we are dedicated, ladies and gentlemen. That's right, from Struggle Street. We are determined, and even the Christmas break isn't going to put us off our stride. So all the movies that we're going to be talking about, four out of the six movies we're going to be talking about are opening on Boxing Day, so they're coming up, and two of them are actually in cinemas now. So we've got all of that stuff to look forward to. But first, Kaylee, what have New Zealanders been watching at the movies this weekend? Have you got the top five for us?
I do. Coming in at number five is the wonderful holiday film Arthur Christmas.
Yay!
Yay! Love it. Number four is New Year's Eve. Boom.
Yeah.
Number three, Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipwrecked, which we'll be reviewing a little bit later and have some funny news bits on.
A staggering box office achievement, I have to say. Yes. Oh boy, that means there's going to be a fourth, doesn't it?
Yes, Puss in Boots slips from the number one position into number two this week, taken out by Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which we will also be reviewing a little bit later in the show.
Looking forward to all of that. And I was reading an article on the Salon website earlier on today about how the box office in the US is so far down on previous years that films like Twilight and Harry Potter have actually been masking the general trend. And there's some very, very worried executives in Hollywood because 3D hasn't reversed the trend, and they're running out of franchises to keep milking. This is, you know, Twilight has been split into two, and Harry Potter's gone now. Next year, of course, we've got the Star Wars film starting to be re-released in 3D, and so I imagine there's a few quid in that still. But it's a little bit of a worry. Not for us as audiences, because I think that there's still some really, really good films to come out. But certainly if you're in the business of making $150 million pictures, you'd be a little bit perturbed at that state of affairs. Anything to add, Simon? Are you looking forward to 2012?
2012 looks fantastic. I mean, it looks so strong the first 3 months.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's the issue will be, you know, fitting it in. It's just going to be so many good films. And, I think these things just have their ups and downs, and it's all driven by just quality, you know.
Exactly. And when I hear people complaining about 3D and how, you know, they hate 3D, 3D movies, etc. No, it's actually just bad movies, isn't it?
It is,
really?
That's right.
That's the big problem.
It's the content.
And we've had some really good 3D content this year, some good art house 3D, and some
Hugo coming along.
I know, very much looking forward to seeing Hugo.
Beautiful.
in January, and that's a great example of 3D done well. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. First up, we're going to start talking about some Muppety goodness.
Let's just start at the bottom and work our way back up to the top.
Can't you see I'm busy?
Come on guys, let's go. I believe in you and you and you and, well, all of you.
Aww.
And now, singing chickens.
Here, is this movie in 3D?
Nope. The Muppets are as one-dimensional as they've always been.
Hey, watch it!
Kaylee, you are a Muppet fan from way back.
I am. I remember watching The Muppet Show on TV. Of course, it was a slightly newer version than the original, but I love The Muppets. Main part of my childhood, as was The Chipmunks, which we'll be reviewing later, but that's a whole other trauma that we won't quite deal with yet. So, yes, The Muppets have finally returned to the big screen, thank goodness. And what's going on is when a nefarious oil tycoon, played by Chris Cooper, who actually has a fantastic rap in the film, you have to see for this Chris Cooper rap, he plans to take down the original Muppet Theater to drill it for oil, but Uber fan Gary sets out with his girlfriend Mary to reunite the disbanded Muppet troupe in order to save it. And there's a whole host of celebrity appearances in the film, which
cameos,
is great. Cameos, yes, it was lovely. So wonderful. And of course, New Zealand Flight of the Conchords, Brett McKenzie has done all the music for it.
Yeah.
So there's some wonderful pieces of music.
And maybe going back to what we were talking about a little bit before, maybe oil under the film studios might be the solution to their problems. Maybe they've actually hit on something, and maybe not. You loved it?
I did love it. Yes. I got
adoration from the other side of the table.
Yes.
I mean, you know, is the rainbow connection in there? All the classics, all the little songs, manamana.
There are most of them. If we don't get to see an entire, you know, performance of those, you know, token songs, they are kind of alluded to throughout. But there is the Rainbow Connection, I believe it is in there.
Yeah, the Rainbow Connection is in there, and that was definitely a moment where there was a few tears in the older part of the audience that I was in who remembered that. It was interesting watching it with an audience full of kids at one of those radio previews, and kids are a really good barometer of how well a film is working, and they were, for the most part, pretty connected, pretty clued in, and stayed focused. And there was a lot of really good buzz from the kids afterwards. And considering the kids won't have that same history that we do, that it's not a nostalgia thing for them. I think that bodes really well for the film.
And I love that whole idea of you know, because I'll take my kids, and it's another generation, that whole nostalgia aspect where you're passing it on to another generation, and you're going to have the same amount of fun, and it's going to be a riot. And by the sounds of it, you know, this film will deliver on all those fronts.
Right. I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say that I didn't love it as much as Kaylee did. Mm. I felt that it was kind of a traditional story in terms of redemption, and like I think we'd seen that story a bit before, and I kind of felt I've seen this on a little bit of the social media response to the film, that it wasn't as anarchic or as completely off the wall and as demented as I remember the original Muppets to be, where you know, you'd watch that half-hour show and it would just fly off in the most incredibly bizarre direction.
It was a bit subversive, wasn't it?
It was. It's very subversive. It was like Python, you know, in lots of ways. Whereas I felt that this film didn't quite... It was perhaps a little bit too respectful.
Right. I mean, it does... It
made
have,
by fans.
Yes, it is. That is a very good point, that his script is definitely written by a huge Muppet fan, obviously Jason Segel. But it, you know, and it had that classic Muppet comedy in it, where it's like they know that they're making bad jokes and, you know, like breaking the third wall, interacting with the audience, like, oh my, why are you still here? Our jokes are terrible. Yeah. But it wasn't as subversive as the original Muppets. You know, when they started out, it's quite safe.
My other problem from a nostalgia point of view is that, and it's a curse of having a really good ear, is that I can tell that the voices of Kermit and Peggy aren't the originals.
That was also a bit difficult for
me. You've really got to make a... it's a stretch to buy into it. It's a little bit like what happened to the Warner Brothers cartoons after Mel Blanc died, you know, and you listen to Bugs Bunny and go, nah, No, it's not quite. You're working really hard, but it's not quite right. So I have to say that that was one of the things that I guess kept me at arm's length with the film and prevented me from kind of embracing it totally. Do you have two words?
Yes, my two-word review, which I've already kind of let sneak out, was classic Muppets.
All right. My two-word review for the Muppets is felt good. And it opens on, before Christmas, isn't it?
29th of December.
Is it? Oh, is it after? Is it? It's post Boxing Day. So once you've watched a whole lot, once you've watched Melancholia on Boxing Day, you can come back to watch The Muppets a few days later. Is that right? The 29th?
Yeah, 29th.
Excellent. Well, that's something to look forward to for people. And now let's go and have a look at something that's in cinemas now that you can actually do right now.
What happened in the Kremlin?
It was a setup.
The Russians are classifying this as an undeclared act of war. The blame points to you and your team. The president has initiated ghost protocol. The entire IMF has been disavowed.
So what happens now? The four of us are all that remains of the IMF. No safe house, no support or extraction. Everyone connected with this man is an asset with valuable information. We come back with our target, or we don't come back.
Now, I think some of our younger listeners might not realise the connection between Mission Impossible and The Muppets, and that is that they were both television series back in the day. Mission Impossible was a beloved television series for a long period of time, and then it was given the big cinema reboot back in the late 90s, 97?
96, I think.
Oh, that far back. It seems like only yesterday, but it was given to a fantastic director, Brian De Palma, who an amazing stylist who absolutely launched the Mission Impossible franchise, gave Tom Cruise his get out of jail free card for the rest of his career, basically. Because, I mean, let's face it, last year, what did he make? Night and Day. And, you know, that was a sign of a career on the skids. But here we are. He's bouncing back with Mission Impossible once again. He's looking a little bit the worse for wear, I have to say. He's past his peak, I think.
Yeah, which happens to the aging male and female body. I mean, there should be at some point where you just shouldn't take your shirt off.
I think you always, when you look at yourself, you think you're young. And that's the way it should be.
Yeah, but you should also have somebody very close to you telling you exactly how you look.
Particularly the director or the stylist. Brad Bird, you let us all down.
Or the misses. So we've got some massive set pieces in classic Mission Impossible style. There are some huge explosions. There's a not terribly convincing explosion at the Kremlin on Red Square in Moscow, but there's an incredibly convincing hanging off the side of the Burj Khalifa, the tallest building in the world in Dubai. That's worth going to see just for that amazing sequence itself. I have to say, though, that we're so used to seeing those things manufactured digitally and created in front of green screens and with performance capture and all the rest of it, that it's actually kind of hard to take things seriously even when they happen for real now. Days of going, wow, that's, you know, even if you know it was a stuntman, those days are gone because it's so hard to pick them apart now. It is done for real with wires preventing Mr. Cruise from plummeting to his doom. But
is it Mr. Cruise who does the stunts?
Yeah, most of it. Because he is a rock climber,
as you say, an old geezer. It's not bad.
Yes, and you can tell he's a rock climber when he starts going. Like,
he's got the technique. Hey,
he's got the technique.
He knows what he's doing. There's another character who arrives on the scene to join the team, Jeremy Renner. You remember him from The Hurt Locker, who's an incredibly intense actor. And he doesn't have very much to do, sort of. I mean, he moves the plot along a wee bit, but he's so intense he's almost out of a different film, you know, like a serious film. But somebody who's not in a serious film and doesn't look like he belongs in a serious film is Simon Pegg.
But I love Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg's the reason why I was like, yes, I will dedicate to watching this film this week. And you know what? I got what I wanted. I got Simon Pegg being Simon Pegg, you know, being the same character he started out as in Spaced. I got exactly what I wanted.
Thank you. Exactly. fair enough. I did feel like the film itself relied far too much on him for its lighter moments, and I would rather... less is more would probably have worked for me with the Pegster.
I mean, I've heard a bit of banter around the traps that it's, you know, a lot of people saying it's the best Mission film to come out, but I get the vibe that you're not...
No.
I found it was a
number
bit...
one still rocks.
Mm. Yeah, because the one I enjoyed this one, Ghost Protocol, but it was just too funny.
Mm.
It was just there's too much comedy in it for it to be like, and yeah, Mission Impossible.
And I never really believed that there was any jeopardy for them or for the planet that they were trying to save. And as a result, I didn't feel invested enough in the characters or. Yeah, so it was really just a whole lot of set pieces, one after the other, and brilliantly filmed and brilliantly conceived, but they're just there's no foundation for them. That was my feeling. So, right. Kaylee, have you got two words for Mission Impossible?
Yes, but first, just first.
Sorry for getting ahead of myself.
Wait, there's more.
So, of course, Mission Impossible, they go to Dubai, and they have that big thing in Dubai. Yeah. Not really sure if they go into any other actual locations, because they go to Mumbai, and there's a couple other places. Yeah. But I can tell you for sure that Seattle, at the end of the film, was Vancouver. And it was actually specifically on Granville Island, where I went to university.
Oh.
And at the end, close to the end, you see a character, and it's like, they get a close-up, and she's walking into the Granville Island market through the back doors. I'm telling you, go there. Walk through those doors. On your left, there will be a pie shop, and on your right, there will be a place called the Market Grill, and it'll be the best burger you will ever have. It is so good, I'm telling you. So,
and that sponsor's announcement brought to you by the people.
We're all sitting here eating these massive burgers right now
by the city of Vancouver.
Yes. So, speaking of a massive set pieces, once again, Vancouver, Boston, Seattle, Chicago is featured,
which is the way to finance the deal, isn't it?
Mm.
Well, I tell you what, that wasn't the only product placement. That Apple are all over Mission Impossible. Mm. And BMW supplied a concept car as well. So there's logos all over Mission Impossible. And you can bet also that the people of Dubai, not that anybody pays tax there, but the bosses of that particular part of the world will have paid big money to get crews to be hanging off that building.
Definitely.
So, you know, that's another thing that when it's so obvious how something's constructed, it's very hard to set aside your disbelief. So, two words, Kaylee.
My two words for Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol are boom and fizzle.
Mine are Tom Who.
Oh.
We're all alone. Life is only on Earth. And not for long.
Never seen you look so happy.
Enjoy it while it lasts. I myself hate marriages.
She ruined my wedding. I will not look at her.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is what we call a complete change of pace, because that was an extract of audio from Lars von Trier's new film Melancholia, which for a long period of time he was threatening to retire and never make another film, and you know, I'm sure there were lots of art house audiences who wouldn't have been unhappy at that state of affairs, but he has bounced back and he launched it at the Cannes Film Festival earlier this year. It played at the New Zealand International Film Festivals, and it's now getting an art house circuit release around Christmas time. And we've been kind of joking about that for as long as Cinematica has been going on, but here it is. It's about to arrive. What do we think about it? Simon, you've seen it.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting counter, actually, to a lot of the films that'll be out. I'm of two minds as to whether or not it's a good time to go with it or not. But, I mean, it's just going to provide such a contrast to what we'll be playing.
Indeed. It's a very, very dark piece of work, but it's also very, very funny.
Mm.
There's no, you know, it's not as if it's existentially depressing in that it's about the end of the world. Let's not muck about.
The first half is quite.
The first half is very funny. Yeah, yeah, the wedding sequence. It's split into two halves. There's a wedding, a very wealthy family on a remote island with in a beautiful house. Kirsten Dunst, who won the Best Actress Award at Cannes for her role, is getting married, but she.
And it takes some hours to get there, doesn't it? Because of this huge limo, and it just can't get around the corners.
That's right. Very, very funny opening sequence.
Mm.
She turns up at the wedding, and as the sequence goes goes on, you realize that something's not quite right with her, and she's not really into this. But everybody's turned up, and she sort of has to go through with it.
Because she just looks like she's got it all.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's amazing.
That's right. But something's not quite right. And then after the wedding sequence, we flash forward to a few weeks later, and a mysterious new star that had appeared in the night sky has now got closer and closer to Earth. And there are worries that will it pass so close to Earth that it'll affect our gravity? Will it affect our weather? And as it gets closer and closer, there's the fear that maybe it's not going to pass by Earth at all. And it's about, I guess, what we would do, how we would feel when we know that we're about to be obliterated and we can sense it coming. How do we react? And every character in the film reacts in a very different and yet very human way. I think it was a massively important film. I actually think I can't recommend it highly enough. I know it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but I do think that so few films are about a profound sense of what it is to be a human being and to be conscious and to be alive, and that's what it's about.
But this has a big reference to one's relevance.
Hmm.
It's actually saying, well, in a way, you know, it's pretty insignificant.
Yeah.
And there's always, you know, like, and so, but does it really say that you should live for the day and seize the moment? I'm not sure if it says that, but
I think what it's saying is that you are on a cosmic level completely, entirely insignificant, but on the level of your friends and family, of the level of your children, on the level of even the three of us sitting around this table, we're not insignificant, and that matters.
Yeah, even though, I mean, the Kirsten Dunst character sort of calms out. She copes with the strain of this event a lot better than her family. I mean, the Kiefer Sutherland character kind of walks off into the sunset in a way, and the Charlotte Gainsbourne's character, she's got the most to lose, and it comes through loud and clear. Like, I thought. That was that was the tragedy for me, was her character and her child.
Yeah,
I found that the sort of hardest part to watch.
Yeah, and as somebody with kids, I can understand that. Whereas I don't have kids, and so but I also have experienced depression, like Kirsten Dunst's character, and so I ended up empathizing with her, and that feeling of helplessness, and then the moment when she discovers that actually everybody else is feeling as helpless as she's felt for all her adult life. She sort of comes into her own, doesn't she?
Yeah.
It's fascinating. There's so much we could talk about.
But finally, just for me, visually, it's just spectacular from start to finish. To look at, to the eye, it is just a sight to behold. And there aren't many films that I've seen which visually just look that stunning.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about digital projection on this show, and the end of 35mm. I saw it at the Wellington Film Festival on 35mm, and it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And it just goes to show that a beautifully made, brand new...
Yeah, brand new is the key.
Yeah, 35mm print on a big screen can still do the business. I think the next time I see it, and I will see it after Christmas, it'll be a DCP digital. Mm. I don't think there'll be 35mm prints floating around for it. So, but it was gorgeous. There's an opening sort of prelude to the film before the wedding starts, of sort of a dream sequence, and it looks like I was sitting there thinking that it was like a film directed by Annie Leibovitz, the Vanity Fair photographer. It was just it's gorgeousness started there and carried on right the way through. If you have a problem with motion sickness, is a classic problem with Lars von Trier films, that he does like to wave the camera around quite a lot, and that wedding sequence might put you off a little bit. So just a little bit of a warning there.
Take your seasickness pills.
Yep. So we've got two words for us.
A melancholic symphony.
All right, and my two words for melancholia: wrist slitting good time.
All right.
Woo! And so, Kaylee, it's time for some news.
Yay! And much, much more uplifting news today. We're going to start out with a little homegrown story. Two Christchurch businesses are turning back the clock to become high street pioneers again. Allison Videoland will reopen by the end of next month and will share its high street premises with C1 Coffee. Awesome. Rent a video, get a coffee.
Yeah, I think that that's a fantastic addition to the news that we've been handling on the show since we started about what cinema going is like in Christchurch. If you have just joined the podcast and haven't listened to some of those earlier shows, go back to episodes 4 or 5, I think, and we do cover the Christchurch situation. And this is a fantastic piece of news for Christchurch people.
And also, on top of that, Allison Videoland spokesman Paul Stewart said that a art house cinema will be built in the new premises and open in March or April as a further draw card for the city centre, because the cordon is about to be lifted in Christchurch as well, which is excellent.
I think that's great. Yeah, it's because they're really struggling for screens, aren't they?
Yeah, and we're not quite sure whether 420 seats is an accurate representation of...
Maybe 42?
Maybe 42, yeah. So we're not sure. If you do know, then drop us a note at cinematicacast at... What's our email address, Kayleigh?
cinematica.podcast@gmail.com.
Awesome. Cinematica... What?
Dot podcast.
Or you could just find us on Twitter at CinematicaCast.
Yeah, I know that one. Yes. And also Facebook as well. Yes. We have a Facebook page that you can
Facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast.
Great. So let us know if you've got any other tips for news. That's a really good way to let us know about them.
Yes. A little bit of news that I'm excited about. So we've seen Lego Batman and Lego Harry Potter, as in Lego bricks, you know, the toy that's been around for ages. Well, there is now going to be new sets based on The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Awesome. Awesome. The photos for it are great. There's a little Lego man with these like golden rings and foofy Hobbit hair. I am so excited for it. I'm buying it.
You know what weirds me out about this whole Lego movie trend is when they take it a step further and then they make movies
using the
Lego characters.
Mm.
I don't think they'll do that. Because the rights are held pretty well. But
I was quite excited actually the first time I saw one of those movies. I thought, yeah, the kids will love that. But no, well, no.
The Lego video games are quite
Lego
good.
Lego Golem.
Though.
I can't quite picture
Lego
it.
Lego Star Wars is a good game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
True.
Lego plug, Star Wars. Plug. Is great.
But yeah, the games are good. I haven't seen.
So when are they going to do Family Guy Lego games? Bring it.
Yes. And critics are adoring the silent film, which is also black and white, The Artist, which is good. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the New York Film Critics Online selected this romantic drama this past weekend as the best movie of the year. The director, whose last name is a bit long and I don't want to try and pronounce because I'm already bad at Twitter handles, was named Director of the Year, while the film also garnered a third award for Best Use of Music. Also this past weekend, the Boston Society of Film Critics named the movie Best Picture for the year and gave the film special recognition for its use of music. And the American Film Institute gave special recognition to The Artist at the AFI Awards. So go see The Artist when it comes out in 2012.
You want to give it a go, Dan?
Hazanavicious.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah,
Hazanavicious.
Hazanavicious.
I was trying today and I was like,
that's a cool name.
And he's a director that's had a couple of films in previous films in the film festival, the spoof spy films, OSS.
Yeah, they're great. They're awesome.
Yeah, very, very popular. So, and do we have dates for The Artist yet? I know 2012, but is it up on the whiteboard yet?
February 9th, it looks like.
That's right. Correct.
And it so, that, yeah, that's, they're accelerating the release pattern for that, because I know last time I looked, they didn't have dates for it, but it's storming all of these top 10 lists and award nominations. And I think that it's a dark horse for an Oscar, isn't it?
It is.
A silent film.
Yeah.
A true silent film.
Maybe we'll put a link to the trailer up on the show notes, because once you've seen the trailer, you'll get a sense of how faithful they are to... So it's not... I mean, they're faithful to the old silent movie style, but it is a successful film in its own right. It isn't just a parody or something like that. So, yeah, we're very much looking forward to seeing it.
Can't wait.
A big romantic hit, I hope. Great. And is that it? Have we got any more news?
No.
We've got some that we're going to save for a little bit later on, aren't we?
Yes, for our next review.
Great.
Chocolate.
So.
Family vacations are all about fun. Relaxing, spending quality time, getting to know each other. First, we're going to need to set some rules.
Dave, come on. Rules is my middle name.
Roma, Roma, ma, ga, ga, ooh la la, want your bedroll.
That's brilliant.
No, it isn't, Simon.
That's inspired me. Can't wait.
It is very, very difficult not to laugh at Chipmunk music, but
there are two Gaga songs.
Yeah, and yes. the sad fact is that there are two people around this table who actually went and watched the film from beginning to end. With that, it's okay. It's funny for like a minute and a half. But I'm sorry, Simon. Next time you're going to get the job of going and doing the Chipmunk movie.
I'm going. I get vetoed. I can't. My kids, you know, they get vetoed.
Take the kids. That's what.
Why didn't when was it playing?
Oh, crikey, we need to organise you better. Kaylee, what's this Chipmunks film about? Have you seen the previous two? Are you familiar with the franchise?
I am familiar with the franchise, Dan. I used to watch it after school as a kid, the original TV show with the great theme music, which I was going to get and play today, but I forgot the and it was this, like, you know, 2D animated series, and it was good and it had morals and it was funny, and what I used to have the tape. They made in the 80s, like the Chipmunks and the Chipettes.
Well, they've been going since the 50s.
Yeah, and the one I had was the 80s tape. They covered, like, Bananarama and all this stuff. And, they had a cover of Venus, which is most amazing.
Helium, if we had some helium here, we could do an entire podcast on the Chipmunks.
I think, really, we've dropped the ball a bit. We should be speaking with helium right now.
Yes. All right. Well, holiday special. We'll run down and get a helium tank. I haven't seen it, but I haven't seen the previous two films, for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this one... The Chipmunks and the Chipettes, they go on holiday, they get up to no good, and they get stranded on a remote island.
Is there a volleyball with a face on it?
No, there is a basketball, a tennis ball.
A
golf ball.
Yeah, so that joke gets pretty much...
Okay.
Yeah, that joke...
Stand down.
So,
right.
Yeah, so the castaway joke gets... flag that gets, you know, flogged like a dead horse. Obviously, when they were making this film, they decided to throw in a bunch of, like, memes and clever things that were happening at the time, and now you watch them and you're like, wow, that's really stupid and dated. Like, wait a sec.
Yeah, you can't... I'm getting really
angry about how bad this film is.
I'm not quite as angry, but I am disappointed. And I'll tell you why I'm disappointed.
You were looking forward to this, Dan. I need to know why you were looking forward to this.
Because I have a bit of a soft spot for those Chipmunks films. The first one I didn't hate, even though I was expecting to. The second one, which had a lot of David Cross in it, I quite enjoyed. You know, it was introducing the Chipettes, and I think the Chipettes were a big addition, a really strong addition to the lineup. And there was this whole record company thing going on, and it was quite a good story, and it was pretty funny. So I wasn't not looking forward to this one, but there were no kids at the screening that I went to. There were only three of us, two grown ups in the front row, and me in the back.
You're a grown-up too.
Tweeting. I am a thanks for saying that.
There were kids at the one I went to, and they're talking through most of it.
Exactly. So. I think that the franchise, at least in New Zealand, I mean, I was just about to say it's dying on its feet, look at that opening. Mm. So where were they all? They weren't at the screenings we went to.
Honestly, target market, my kids, you know, they'll love it. Yeah. And it'll be a great outing for them. They loved the last two.
Yeah,
they'll just have a blast, and that's that's what it's for. So when you look at that, you got to look at it through their eyes.
Yeah, exactly. I do feel that this was thrown. It feels thrown together story wise and joke wise, and not enough music actually.
Yeah, and you know, the whole musical genre has really kind of just repeated itself over and over and over again. Like with Glee coming out, and then, you know, there's another American television coming out, and you have all these movies, and the Chipmunks just felt like it is just still riding on that. And it's because it's not just music, it's covers of pop music.
Yeah, this felt to me like something that that if it was released by a company like Disney, would have gone straight to video. You know, it would be like Lion King 2. You know, those movies they do that are really just cash in. Beauty and the Beast 2 goes straight to video. This didn't feel like it really deserved to get a place in cinemas, unfortunately.
Yeah. And speaking of 35 versus digital, I really like 35.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a print of this, and it looked awful.
It was a shocker, wasn't it?
It should have been digital because it's a kid's movie. It needs to be bright and in your face. And
And yeah, and it did. It looked cheap, and it was cheap. And we've got a little bit of news.
Yes. So speaking of David Cross, who I like as well, you know, from Arrested Development and many other comedy shows and sketches.
And he played, and he was in the Bob Dylan film that Cate Blanchett was in.
I'm Not There.
I'm Not There. That's right. Yeah, he was in that. He played the poet guy. Anyway, carry on.
So
the poet guy.
Yeah. So Chipwrecked has been getting terrible reviews, and it's rotten on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a bad thing. So David Cross isn't making anything better at all, because the actor-comedian recently ended his contract with the franchise because he tells The Playlist, a review site, that this last film was literally, without question, the most unpleasant experience I've ever had in my professional life. And David Cross, I have to agree.
Yeah, he does spend the entire film dressed in a pelican costume.
And he looks so pained and angry and the entire time.
Speaking as somebody who has also spent some of his professional life
in a pelican
and
suit.
Not in a pelican suit. I spent a morning at Wellington Zoo dressed as Hudson the Cookie Bear once.
My dad
used
to dress up as Jerry the Moose.
And right.
Yeah, friends at school were like, your dad's Jerry the Moose, it's so cool.
It can be a really cool job. I also spent 2 weeks dressed as the Pink Panther for a shoe shop. And so I can tell you that it wears off that magic.
So are you dressed as a large pink cat or as a diamond?
Oh, a large pink cat. And my job was to drive around with a radio station and spot pink plastic bags that belong to the shoe shop, right? And then we'd give them a spot prize. But I wasn't allowed to wear my glasses in the Panther costume.
People over?
Can't see if they've got the bag or not, but they'll do.
It's and I tell you what, the other thing about, if anybody ever asks you to be Hudson the Cookie Bear, they put the head on you and then they say, oh, and by the way, now you're Hudson the Cookie Bear, you're not allowed to say anything except dumpty-doo. So, because you can't spoil it for the kids, right? And so all of your communication about where you want to go, what you want to do, you're hungry or whatever, has to be through the vehicle of dumpty-doo.
Dumpty-doo.
That must have been like a really existential moment.
He used to write to me. The Cookie Bear.
Hudson.
Used to write me.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's every birthday.
He's a mate.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I liked him.
Cool. We've gone way off topic. Have you got two words for Chipwrecked?
Rat filled disaster.
Mine is bargain bin, unfortunately.
Someone must say the unsayable.
Methinks the lady doth screech too much.
If you want to change this party, lead it.
Watch your thoughts, for they become words.
If you want to change the country, lead it.
Watch your words, for they become actions.
This is it. Steady the buffs, old girl.
Watch your actions, for they become your character.
Prime Minister.
Shoulders back, tummies in.
That was The Iron Lady and Meryl Streep. And who's picked this one? Or is this me?
Who's seen that? I've seen it.
I missed it, unfortunately. Yeah. I've been in the middle of moving house.
Simon, tell us a little bit about The Iron Lady.
Well, you know, I saw this title in the release chart a while ago, and I was just a little bit of trepidation about it, because I guess, you know, I wouldn't consider myself to be a big fan of the Tory government over that time, mm-hmm. Mrs. Thatcher, and so, you know, I was interested to see what it would be like and what it would be, how it would approach those kind of, I guess, you know, difficult issues that probably people, you know, they still have a resonance.
They do to a certain generation. That's my concern is that actually that there'll be a lot of people perhaps not quite as... who weren't around the way that you and I were, who will take this as being historically accurate, which is a worry because actually it isn't, you know.
It kind of is historically accurate, but it just kind of blows over it. Like, it doesn't go into any detail. And I think that's the, you know, like, because Meryl Streep is great in it, and it has this wonderful opening scene where, you know, she's off buying the milk and, you know, the security's looking for her and all that sort of thing. It's a wonderful scene, and it's really...
It's a great lead into the film,
It is a really good lead-in. You go, wow, this is, you know, this is going to really be you know, hit the ground running. And then it spends a lot of time dwelling on her relationship with Dennis and a lot of flashbacks. And it does get a bit kind of almost, you know, like there's a lot of it, almost too much of this kind of backwards and forwards. And then you know, sort of her relationship with her husband, Dennis. Yeah. And so it's, but, you know, it wasn't actually, I mean, I really enjoyed the film to watch Meryl Streep and Jim Broadbent, who I, you know, really like, and they were really, you know, I thought they were great in their roles, and they did a very good job, and especially Meryl, you know, I just think she was awesome to look at. You believed that it was her, and
yep.
So yeah, I thought, you know, it ticks the boxes on a number of fronts, but the big thing for me was just that it really just touched on a number of big events and kind of bundled them all in together. Without, you know, like you had the Falklands, you had the miners' strikes, you had the bomb going off in the hotel, you know, you had...
But every single time something like that happened, it was presented as if she was being attacked, that it was her and her government being attacked, and that she was the victim in those sort of situations. And yet, she constructed those scenarios, you know. She was her politics and were all about divide and rule. They were all about setting people against each other. They were all about competition above all else, and that the strongest would survive, which is how she ruled her own party and her cabinet. And they don't realize that you know, when you watch a little montage of the miner strike or the poll tax or what have you, it looks as if loutish rebels are chucking stuff at police, when actually it was completely constructed by her.
And it does, and it kind of backhands it into history real quick without any kind of relevance. It doesn't give it the time and justice it deserves, because I mean, there were big, you know, big events in Britain's history, and it does, it kind of brushes over them. But I guess, you know, there's also the argument that it focuses a lot on her relationship with her family, and some of the more touching parts in the film are actually, you know, based around her relationship with her daughter, you know. I think no mention of the son, really, very little, you know.
But he was an idiot, wasn't he? I mean, that's a fact.
Yeah, well, he
undisputed.
Yeah, and
last time he was in the news, he was trying to overthrow an African government somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. But it does kind of, you know, it does sort of have a commentary also, I guess, on the cost of to the family, and that comes through on the daughter. So I think, you know,
I think the other thing that it got, it did well, was the impact of Alzheimer's and dementia, and I think that was a very an interesting way in to her reminiscing, because evidently as a real human being, she's not much of a one for looking back. She's not much of a nostalgist.
Mm.
Whereas if you create this situation where she's not entirely sure what era she's living in, then you. It's a mechanism to be able to go backwards and forwards and have these flashbacks. So I thought it was quite sensitively handled, particularly by Streep herself. And let's be honest, the reason for going and seeing this is to see somebody at the absolute peak of their powers do an astonishing job.
Yeah, and there's a curiosity factor to how the topics or the events will be handled. I had issues with it. You know, I definitely do, but it was, you know, for me it was still watchable, and it was still well done. You know, it's done to a certain point. Would it have been better if it had more, you know, detail and dug down more layers? You know, that's probably would have been. You know?
Yeah, I think it would have been better if it didn't actually treat her as if she was the greatest Englishman who ever lived. You know, I think that there's definitely a feeling that the filmmakers have a lot more time for her. I mean, she's basically a cross between Boadicea and Winston Churchill, isn't she, in the film? And it got to a point where she's leaving 10 Downing Street. I mean, no spoiler alert here. I think we all know she's not still Prime Minister, right? But she's leaving 10 Downing Street and she's walking across rose petals. That's listening right. to an opera background, and it's like I at this point I wanted history to be rewritten slightly and have her gutted like a halibut, because that's how I felt about the real Margaret Thatcher, Mrs. Thatch. I have mixed feelings about her. No, I don't really have mixed feelings about her. She was the most pernicious, but she did have a massive impact on my life, because I wouldn't be here sitting talking to you now if it wasn't for her. So in some ways I have to be sort of grateful.
And I mean, it's funny, because I think about films like The Queen or The King's Speech, and you think, well, what's the difference? You know, and it's because, you know, they're a lot more sort of fact-driven, and they interrogate those facts a lot more. They dig deeper, and they, you know, I mean, because in some ways, you know, there is a kind of comparison, I think, particularly with maybe the Queen, you know, like, but yep. but it doesn't get close to the caliber of those films.
No, two words, Simon.
What did I come up with? I came up with a giddy history lesson.
That's three words, we'll hyphenate. Two of those at some point we'll get some hyphenating because I've got to hyphenate mine as well. Mine, my two words are crypto-fascist apologia.
Whoa.
Because you're like Wolfie from Tooting. Remember what was that? TV
Freedom
show?
For Tooting.
Freedom for Tooting.
Citizen Smith, exactly. Citizen Smith. So that's our two words. That's more television for old people. Kaylee. Next we
look good rock climbing.
We get a bit closer to home now for our final film of the show.
The model ship conceals a clue to one of the greatest secrets in all history.
I'm warning you. Get out while you still can. These people do not play nice.
I will find that ship, with or without your help.
Thanks. I'm Tintin, by the way.
Haddock. Archibald Haddock.
There we go. The Adventures of Tintin. And it's been playing in Europe now for a couple of months, doing gangbusters business in Europe, the home of Hergé, the home of Tintin. It doesn't open here in New Zealand until Boxing Day.
Yeah, that's right.
And yet, I don't know anybody who hasn't seen it now.
I haven't.
Haven't you?
No.
What have you been doing? On. I've seen it twice.
I know, it's just one of those ones I want to save up.
Oh, okay.
I want to go.
You don't want to watch it. You don't want to watch it in an empty cinema with the likes of us. You want to watch it with a whole
exactly.
lot of
I want to go with a bunch of mates.
Civilians.
And I want to check it out. Take the kids yep. and have a really rock through it.
I think that's what I'd like to do for my second viewing. I think that'd be nice.
And interestingly enough, yeah, definitely a second viewing on the cards. And I've seen it twice now, and I enjoyed it more the second time.
If I'd put that on my CV for reviewing, though, that wouldn't have gone down too well. Yes. Oh, no, I can't see that. I've got to wait.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it...
Don't you know that the whole point of being a movie reviewer is to get completely upset about not being able to see things first. That's get on Twitter and you'll see that's what most people complain about.
Well, because I must admit, when I saw this, and I thought, wow, what's going on here? You know, it's opening so early in Europe and it's coming out on the 26th of December in New Zealand, you know. What's up with that, you know, is it? But it's just all about building, you know, building the momentum.
It is building momentum. It is also about honouring the fact that Tintin is owned by the Belgians, basically. Mm. And
it was also launched as part of an anniversary of Tintin as well. So
I spoke to a guy from Belgium the other day about that, and I didn't know what he was talking about for a while because he kept pronouncing it Tintin. Tintin, which is evidently how you pronounce it.
Or how my boyfriend, Tintin. Or sorry, how my man friend describes it as Tonton, because he's trying to be French to make fun of me. I'm like, just stop.
So there's quite a lot of plot in this film, The Adventures of Tintin, and it's about Tintin, the boy reporter, and his dog Snowy finds a beautiful model of a three-masted, two-deck, triple-decked, I don't know, pirate ship or whatever, takes it home, finds that somebody else is also after it. Inside the mast is a clue
to one of the world's greatest treasures.
To one of the world's greatest treasures as well. Daniel Craig, playing Saccharine, the villain, is also after it for his own ends. He's also got an ulterior motive. And as part of the adventures, Tintin stows away. Well, he's captured, isn't he? He's dragged on board ship. And when he's on this rusty steamer, he finds the captain who's been locked up, and that's Archibald Haddock, played by Andy Serkis. And their adventures take them all over the world, all over the Middle East. Where else do they go? It's a rock and roll journey, isn't it, really,
it
that
really
they're on?
Is, yep. Yes.
I really enjoyed it, actually, and I enjoyed it more thinking about it afterwards. I must admit that seeing it on the same day as Arthur Christmas, it still didn't hit the giddy heights emotionally for me that Arthur Christmas did, where I really took it to my heart. So I don't love the Tintin movie, but I enjoyed it, and I really respect the achievements within it. I think that it's the first time I've really seen performance capture work and actually add value to the characters. And, you know, that whole dead-eyed problem that people have been complaining about for years, that doesn't exist with these characters. And so the biggest problem really is Tintin himself, who's, as a character, is a little bit flat and not terribly interesting. It's really his purpose is to gather all of these really interesting characters around him, but as a central sort of core protagonist, he doesn't quite have it going on there for me.
Have you read the Tintin books?
Yeah, I did as a kid, and I did enjoy them, but I have to say I was a bit more of an Asterix boy myself, and maybe that's why I didn't get as deeply involved in it.
It's funny because I went through phases. You know, there was Asterix, there was Tintin, there was Lucky Luke. You know,
oh, right. Yeah, I remember Lucky Luke. Stuff. Yep.
Yeah, but I must admit, Tintin is the one I keep going back to. Love it.
Still, to this day.
Oh, yeah. That's great fun.
Good stuff. Well, I haven't. I must admit, I haven't picked up a Tintin book in a long time, and maybe I will. It's time to go back.
Today's a big retro day for me because Chipmunks and Muppets and now Tintin, because there's also an animated TV show that I used to watch on Saturday mornings or when I got home from school, which I really enjoyed. If you're a fan of the books, it follows the book quite closely and kind of the way it works quite closely. I think that's why people who don't know the books that well find the performances a bit flat, because that's kind of how it works in the book and how Haddock is the more interesting character. Yeah. And actually between Tintin and Snowy does a lot of talking in the books.
Right.
And
Snowy's the brains of the outfit.
The brains of the outfit. So they kind of bring it through, but because you can't really have a dog running around 3D with a 2D speech bubble. You know, Snowy was, I think, scaled back a little bit as being the brains of the operation.
I think my problem is that yes, they've been true to the books, and yes, they've been really respectful, and yes, they have done everything they can to, I guess, appease the Tintinologists out there. But does that mean it works? Is that the best thing for the film? I guess because the film ultimately has to stand on its own 2 feet. And so my feeling was that there was an awful lot of talking in there to try and explain the convoluted plot. And if I was a kid watching it, I'd feel like there'd be some quite long periods where it just goes flat while grown-ups on the screen talk to each other about maps and treasure and rather than actually sort of going and doing it. So that's, I guess, my issue with it.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting. I'm looking forward to the sequel to see what they do with that and if they mix it up or if they're going to keep it kind of the same way, because it's switching. It's going to be Peter Jackson directing the sequel, which is already being written right now.
Yep.
And Spielberg will be the producer. So.
Yep, and Cinematica will be there on the case reporting back.
So two words?
Two words. Let's find a piece of paper here. Too talky.
I'm going to go with three words because there have been so many mixed reviews. I really just want to tell people to go see it and kind of give us your opinion. What did you think about it? If you're a fan of Tintin, if you're not, how did it work for you?
Great. That's the end of our show. That's the last of the reviews for our special Christmas special. Are we going to try and sing a carol? Because we should be all Christmassy. I know that we've got the party hats on, we've pulled some crackers,
turkey's on the table, got cranberry,
there's cake, there's turkey.
That's why it's so hot in here, obviously, is because, you know, they left the oven door open.
I didn't put my buffet pants on.
We've done some pretty dumb jokes, so that part of Christmas is pretty much covered, isn't it? Anyway, so this has been our Christmas special. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Next week on the show, it's our special Best of 2011 edition. We'll be handing out bouquets and brickbats. I still don't know what a brickbat is, but evidently that's what you do when you're balancing your bouquets, and we'll also be looking forward to some great movies in 2012. We'll be talking about all of those too. So if you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us some feedback at the iTunes store, ratings, reviews, etc. There are other places you can get the podcast from. If you're an iTunes or an Apple agnostic, as some people are, you can get them from cinematica.co.nz, and you can just do a search on the Google machine for Cinematica and you'll find us and our work. You can contact us through Kaylee. Tell us about our social media paraphernalia.
Yes, so of course, as many of you already know, because you're so wonderful to us on Twitter, we are on Twitter. Our handle is CinematicaCast, with a little at sign before it. And of course, we are also on Facebook, so come on over, give us a like, listen, rate us, tell your friends, tell your mother, which is facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast.
Any more information that we can possibly squeeze out?
No.
All right, the show is executive produced by Simon Wherry, produced and engineered and edited by me, Dan Slevin. The news editor and weather girl is Kaylee Carruthers. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke. You can buy that at the iTunes store, and I hope you do, because it's a fantastic piece of music. We're going to leave you with one of the songs from the Muppet movie. Kaylee, you can... Oh, stop lip syncing for just a moment, please, and tell us what we're listening to.
We are listening to Manor Muppet from The Muppets, written by our lovely Flight of the Conchord man, and it's so good. It's like tears.
All right, this is good night from me, Dan Slevin.
And it's good night from me, Simon.
And Kaylee Carruthers.
See you next week.
I look into these eyes, and I don't recognize the one I see inside. It's time for me to decide, am I a man or am I a Muppet?
Am I a Muppet?
If I'm a Muppet, well, I'm a very manly Muppet.
Very manly Muppet.
Am I a Muppet? Here I go again, I'm always running out of time. I think I made up my mind. Now I understand who I am.
I'm a man. That's what I am.